It is titled The 1989 Montreal Massacre and Its Widespread Social Significance. I'm sure you all remember that event, which took place on December 6, 1989, when a 25-year-old man walked into the École Polytechnique in Montreal and shot to death 14 women, wounding 13 others. And the presenters will be Christine Cassie and Carrie Potvin. I'm sure that's going to be a very interesting session, so hope to see you at that next week. I'm going to ask Chris to come up in a minute to field questions. I want to remind you that questions will be answered if you would come up to this mic, state your name, keep your questions brief, and because this is being recorded to go on to audio on our website, there can be no conversation really taking place between the speaker and people on the floor because it won't be recorded. So it would just amount to a bit of dead space. So please, all your conversation with the speaker, take place at this mic. And I guess that's all I have to say. So Chris, if you would please come up to the podium, we'd be happy to grill you. Thank you.
It was that interesting.
Okay.
Chris, Tony Kellington, thank you for your presentation. I just want to put a sharp edge to this and ask if you agree or disagree. And I'm sure that the political figures will want to spin this in positive ways, and no politician can be reelected saying, you know, dire things are going to happen. But what I see in this, if the Canadian dollar remains at its present level and the oil market remains as it does, that Alberta and Saskatchewan will thrive on this and that Ontario will be impoverished. Because I don't see efficiency making a difference of 25% in the finished product. And I wonder, is that too pessimistic, or are we looking at a radical reshaping of wealth in Canada if this were to be maintained for 20 years, say?
I would say that you probably are looking at some redistribution of wealth, some significant redistribution of wealth under the present circumstances. It's very much oil-based, though. It's interesting to see. We're not seeing the same thing on the natural gas side. Natural gas prices are flat. One-third of the natural gas rigs are idle right now. They can't find, the cost of exploration is fairly high, and that means labor for them. But we are increasingly becoming more dependent again on oil, and I think that's the concern, because I think those of us that have been around for about 25 years or longer remember the early 80s in Alberta, and oil is a commodity, and its price fluctuates, and if we saw the price of oil drop down below $40 or something at some point in the next 5 years, and we've become more dependent on oil as the engine of growth in Alberta, and we've sacrificed diversification, that trend could reverse. So, and the impact for Alberta could be significant. Again, you know, I've seen those bumper stickers that they have on some of the cars in Calgary, that they wanted the price of oil to go up and they wouldn't throw it away this time. You know, but the so the price of oil has gone up. There are some winners, but and Alberta has benefited, and there has been a lot of detriment in Ontario due to the currency issue, and I think not being able to respond quickly enough to that currency issue.
My name is Knut Peterson. Chris, thanks a lot for doing this. There was a bit of a challenge getting it together, but it happened. Could you comment a little bit about cross-border shopping? What's the, you know, spending $40 on gas to go and save $35? Is that the...
Yeah. I could try to comment. I won't second-guess why people do those types of things. I know the bigger the discrepancy... You know, if the Canadian dollar is trading at a premium to the U.S., the reality is you're not going to be able to convince people to do anything differently. I think the number is something like over 90% of Canadians live within 3 hours' drive of the U.S. border. And it's more intense in southern Ontario. So what's going to happen is if there's a 10% premium, the Canadian currency to the U.S. premium, we aren't going to be able to stop people from going and shopping. And whether it makes sense or not economically, people, there will be just that incentive, and there'll be there's other reasons why people cross-border shop other than values. I know there's lots of people that go there in groups, you know, sort of like women's like a social party. They all get in a van and go to Great Falls and shop and come back. You know, there's a social aspect to it as well. But it's that much more, that much more of an incentive when there's value in terms of the currency fluctuation. So I don't think there's much we can do about it. People are humans, and they're going to make those kind of choices. In other countries, it's less so. I was in Australia last year, and Cyclone Larry had hit their banana crop. When I went into their grocery stores, their bananas were something like $16 a kilogram, which just blew me away. And you know, when you come from here and it's 57 cents a kilogram, and people were buying them enthusiastically because they're saying, we're supporting the banana industry, you know, in Australia, and helping them get back on their feet. I don't think we have that same sense here in Canada. That I think people are a little more—they're more interested in their own pocketbook than doing something for the national cause. We just don't have that. Yeah.
Dare I touch this? John Boris, I taken a back seat view of a lot of these things lately because of my health, but I couldn't help but ask Chris what he thought of this one problem. I never heard the word hedging, derivatives, or guarantees. None of that was mentioned in there, and that is what is now being done and will have to be done. Can you explain or enlarge?
That's true. I did make a reference to a local company that basically they've hedged their future purchases of equipment by taking a position on the Canadian dollar in October. So we'll have to be smarter about those types of things. To be honest with you, if you take the practical aspect, that being right here in Lethbridge, you've got branch plants for the most part, of international corporations. So it's harder to get your head office, your international head office, to hedge on your behalf for an investment in Canada, you know, versus it just makes it that much more complicated an investment when they could make a simpler investment somewhere else. But Canadian businesses are going to have to be more sophisticated and basically offset some of those currency fluctuations, because if there was ever a case for hedging and derivatives, it's right now when the currency fluctuations are so unpredictable. And if you want to take out the currency risk, you lock in at a rate that you think is attractive and is going to provide you with a rate of return. It's an option, but not for everybody. But that's true, John. We'll have to become more sophisticated, and it's going to be the smaller businesses that will have that opportunity. The family-owned businesses will be able to make those decisions a lot more easily than the branch plant operations.
Well, the banks have guaranteed one that was in the papers. The people that bought these had hedged their debts. That they had this money, and the banks were stuck with it.
Uh-huh.
The banks came in and told the people, stay there, from what I hear in the paper.
Yep.
I mean, are they the ones that are going to save everything?
Until the banks want to cash out, yep.
My name is Doug Miller. Some of our Canadian manufacturers make product in Canada, like Bombardier and GM, They sell it, they ship it to the States and sell it cheaper than we can buy it in our own country. That might be creating bad public relations for them. Do you have any comment?
Yep. It probably is, and I think about 2 months ago we did see some of those stories about people wanting to go into Minnesota to buy snowmobiles because they were several thousand dollars cheaper than they were in Manitoba, for example. I saw that particular one. And there has been some adjustment. We saw it with the retailers, too. They haven't exactly earned your loyalty and respect. So that's what the perception of the consumers is. They've been slow to react to the currency fluctuation. I think the one thing that isn't appreciated is the investment that's already happened. So those corporations would have to take a big loss in order to achieve some of those things and achieve fairness in terms of the selling prices. So, yes, those things are happening, and it's not good PR when you have corporate policies that say that you're going to sell the same piece of equipment for 15% less in another market, and you're going to restrict people from your market from taking advantage of that. So it's a big problem. Yep.
Chris, my name is Larry Connolly. And the question that I have for you, and I'd hate to think that I was a cynic of any kind, but do you think this is a manufactured crisis for Canada and other countries in the world because of the situation that the United States has found themselves in?
Boy. I don't know if I can answer that question with any expertise. I'd only be speculating. Okay. Well, it does concern me that decisions in the United States tend to be politically driven rather than based on economics in the last few years, and I think that's a problem when some of the senior political people say that the debt isn't important. It sends the wrong message to people who think that currency and debt are important things around the world. So you lose a lot of credibility with the Japanese and the Germans and obviously the Europeans. I think President Sarkozy coming over to Washington last month saying that we won't tolerate it if you allow your currency to slide is sending that kind of a message that they want them to pay attention and try and restore the value of their currency, not undercut everybody else. And, you know, we're not lily white on this. We basically, in Canada, we've basically allowed our currency to fall, and that was a tremendous trade advantage for us. You know, that's almost a ridiculous one at 62 cents. So we've done it ourselves, so it's hard for us to point the finger at them. But the idea, at least at that same time, we were reducing our government debt, and our government's in a lot healthier situation. The Americans are world leaders, if you like, when it comes to maintaining law and order, no matter what you think of their decision to enter Iraq. They did undertake it, and they incurred the full cost of that, and that's the largest contributor to their debt is the cost of the war in Iraq, and the second one was Katrina, which is beyond their control. So they don't care. This administration has said that they don't care about the level of the debt, that they're prepared to maintain tax cuts and maintain military spending and do what it takes to rebuild New Orleans. But the problem comes is that people lose faith in your currency when your debt seems to be out of control and the majority of your debt is owned by other countries.
Michael Cormack and Chris, thank you very much. Very good presentation, very clear and everything. Over the past couple of weeks, it's been kind of circulating in my mind. Have we been a little too paranoid about harmonization, and would harmonization help us? Like, I mean, they talk about it with regard to NAFTA, with regard to security and prosperity, etc. And if we could keep our independence somehow, I guess the big fear is that with harmonization, we fear we'll lose our independence.
I guess I'm, rightly or wrongly, I'm a free trader because I believe that Canada's an exporting nation. And the best way that we can generate wealth for Canadians is to make the products in our country, not just export raw materials and our natural resources, and add value and provide wealth for Canadians here. We don't have a large enough population to sustain an economy. You know, 30 to 33 million people is not large enough to maintain that. I think what we need to do is expand trade. We have to be less dependent on the Americans. Perhaps one of the solutions might be getting into a larger trading bloc with people like the Brazilians and the Argentinians. Like South America is another place where we could expand our trade. Certainly the Far East is a big opportunity, but everybody's trying to expand in the Far East. I just think if in the Americas we had a currency, a common currency, similar to what the Europeans have, like a euro, we would be less impacted by what's happening in the United States. Brazil has, trying to think how many people they have, I think it's well over 100 million people. If we aligned ourselves with them, the Mexicans, and other developing countries so that there was an offsetting block to the United States with equivalent population, and then we all eventually moved towards a common currency, and that's not going to happen next year or in 5 years or 10 years, but that might be a goal that we have, is to achieve something like what the Europeans have, so we wind up with more stability.